KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at KHUM.com.
12:06 now, and as always, brought to you by Cocotat, Bayside Garden Supply, and Singing Tree, the nursery out there in Dalles Prairie. It's Coastal Currents. Hey, Jessica Hall from Humboldt Baykeeper.
Hey, Mike Drunkers of KHUM Radio.
You were overhearing my conversation with efficiency engineers.
Yes.
How out of my league, like, I'm always out of my league, but how, like, by order of magnitudes, how out of my league when I was telling the guy how his job is supposed to work?
Well, I don't think it's about you being out of your league. I think, as I was saying to you off air, it's about your perspective on what you think matters versus what other people think matters.
Right. Like, I will sit in my house and wear a sweater, no prob. I like that, but I can't wear a sweater to run my microwave. So if I was going to spend money insulating the house versus putting solar panels on the house, that's a no-brainer to me. But this dude, he's trying to say nah.
But I think what you're also saying is that saving energy by not using electricity is a greater good for the environment than saving energy by not using natural gas.
I think I lost you, but you're right. Whenever I lose you, you're probably right. And so with that said, we have got a guest on the line. I believe we've got Scott here. Scott, are you with us?
I am with you.
This is Scott from the Humboldt Bay Rowing Association. Welcome to Coastal Currents.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Scott.
Hi.
Scott, do you know Jess? Have you met Jessica Hall?
I don't believe I have.
Nope, we haven't met yet.
Do you know Adrienne McConnell?
I do know Adrienne McConnell.
She's the best, huh?
She is the best. She is largely responsible for what our club is today. So we really like her.
The Humboldt Bay Rowing Association, Jessica Hall, who recently moved here, relatively speaking, did you know that they are very prestigious?
Well, no, actually. Tell me about it.
Scott, how prestigious are you?
Well, we've been to our juniors rowing club, which is kids from ages 12 to 18, has been to the National Rowing Championships for the last 5 years now.
And where is that?
That changes every year. Last year, it was in Tennessee. And before that, it was in Ohio. And I believe this next year, it's going to be down in Sacramento.
I thought that was in Princeton for some reason.
I knew you were thinking that on Lake Carnegie.
Yeah, that is the National Training Center, or one of the National Training Centers is right out of Princeton.
Wow.
And I just have to say, since we're talking, I know Mike wanted to go there. Lake Carnegie, which is where the rowing happens, was actually dug out at the behest of the Carnegie family. It's a fake lake that was just created just for rowing.
So they're like, look, there's beautiful habitat here. Let's just put water on it.
Something like that.
Something like that. So the Humboldt Bay Rowing Association practices on Humboldt Bay, not dug out for rowing purposes.
Dug out for all sorts of other purposes.
Yes, it's dug out, but not by the Rowing Association. Yeah. Prestigious nonetheless, you guys are doing a Learn to Row Day. Tell us about that.
We are. All the clubs in the United States are asked to do this Learn to Row on June 1st. And what it is our club chooses to do it for free. It gives you the opportunity to come on down. We'll teach you how to row, the basics of it. And then we stick you in a boat and you row. It'll take about 2 hours of your time. And it's a lot of fun. And it's a great opportunity to do something that's often considered very expensive to do. And you get to do it for free. So
it seems, yeah, I mean, those boats, it's not like everybody's got a cousin with a huge racing boat laying around.
No, the boat's top end can cost up to $50,000. What we row, generally, they run in the range of $30,000 for the nine-person boat. That's the big long ones that are about 60 feet long.
And those nine-person, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No problem. There's many other levels. There's the four-person boats and the singles out there, so there's a lot of different varieties that we can do.
So, Scott, when you say it can be a very expensive sport, I mean, actually, it's Mike who said that, but does that mean that to be a member of your club as well, or do you guys sort of, how does that work?
Well, our club's unique. Out there, most of the clubs charge a whole lot to row. Our club, we really strive to get more people involved in rowing, and so it does cost to become a member. This Learn to Row is kind of a teaser event for you, but we have all sorts of clinics running throughout the summer They do cost, you know, they're about $150 for a 2-week session, which really isn't that bad. And then if you want to continue with us, it generally runs about $40 a month. But the sport of rowing itself has this image of prestige and yuppiness, I suppose. Very, very expensive. So,
did you see the Facebook movie?
I have, of course.
Okay.
There you go.
Yeah, do you just hate the Winklevoss twins? It's like they did you no favors.
Yeah, there's a lot of that out there, and I haven't gotten the opportunity to meet them, so I don't know what they're really like, but they definitely give that prestigious I'm better than you sort of look that rowing has.
Well, that's just a Princeton thing, too. So let me ask you this, because we see those boats in the water. Question number one of two. How fast are you guys going on those practice mornings, like just in general?
In general, you're probably running about 10 to 12 miles an hour.
10 to 12. Shouldn't you express that in knots?
I was just going to say.
No, you know, rowing has never taken on, or at least to my knowledge, has not taken on the knots. So I think we've always done it in miles an hour. And honestly, most of the time we don't talk about how fast we're going in terms of miles per hour speed. In that way, what we talk about is how fast we're rowing in meters per minute.
So,
they're going metric on you.
And we make it even more confusing. We talk about how many minutes it takes you to row 500 meters, and that's our unit of measurement. So,
and how long does it take to row 500 meters?
Well, a fast rower can do it in about 1 minute, 30 seconds, and probably the average rower is trying to keep it below 2 minutes.
Okay, so here come a flurry of really stupid questions. Jessica, don't let me... These are look, if I...
I'm just silent thinking that it would take me a lot longer than that.
I know. Especially if we're running. It's like 5 football fields. Okay, so what's in the boat? I've always wondered, like, are your feet in stirrups, like... Is the cushion flat, or does it have like the butt contours? Is it padded? Like, is there drink holders? What's in the boat?
Oh, that'd be nice if there were some drink holders. Now, basically what you have in the boat, you have foot stretchers, and they've evolved now. They're basically shoes that you slide your feet in, and your feet are supposed to be able to pop in and out pretty easy. But they hold your foot pretty firmly in place, and that is about the only thing that's actually below the top edge of the boat. Your seat, you're sitting on a sliding seat that actually moves back and forth, and the newer ones are generally mostly contoured to the shape of your rear end. They're not the most comfortable things in the world, but you tend to forget that as you're rowing along.
Do advanced rowers have like custom seats made?
There are some custom seats out there. There are some fancy lightweight carbon ones that are out there. Some people have really interesting pads that they put on there. And you know, honestly, you can make your own pad out of get some rubber and cut it, and you're good to go. So there's a lot of different ways to make it more comfortable for sure.
That's the thing. People like to customize their chair pads.
A little bit, yeah. Some people do. Some people, I mean, I'd say the majority of rowers just sit down on any seat, anytime. So
you're not going to put a Baykeeper sticker on the seat pad?
Yeah, you should do that.
There you go, yeah.
We can make that happen.
We can do that.
Do you ever try to, like, I know that you are a serious sport, and I know that fun is second to winning with you guys. But do you ever try to, like, drag stuff? You try and pull a skier sometimes?
You know, there are clubs that do that. We haven't done it yet. Maybe it's something we should get into up there.
You
it's
absolutely
a little tricky
should.
With our water.
Yeah, I would do it. If you guys want to tow somebody who weighs over 200 pounds and is 6'4" and doesn't know how to get up on a wakeboard, I'm your guy.
That would probably set a record.
Let's do it. Let's do it, Scott. So you've got customized butt pads. You've got shoes that slide back and forth. Is rowing an arm sport or a leg sport?
It is primarily a leg sport. You're pushing off the foot stretchers with your legs, sliding your butt backwards, while holding onto the oar, your upper body is kind of just finishing the motion out, but most of the power comes from your legs.
And are you using your abs as well when you're doing that? Is that the secret?
Oh, yeah. You're using every single muscle you've got. It's a complete body workout.
And Jessica Hall, when you were at Princeton, like, what year do they force you to start taking rowing classes? Is it sophomore or junior?
It never happened.
Oh, that's not true.
That's not...
Every week, we throw Princeton under the bus.
I want to know about the dynamics of being on a team in a rowboat, or a scull, excuse me. So when you are with other people in the boat, how do you ensure that everybody's contributing equally to that effort? Or how do you handle when somebody's not able to keep up?
Well, you know, you're in a rowing shell, it's true. Everybody has to follow each other perfectly. I mean, 100%. And so you're only as fast as that slowest person. So you just can't go any faster. Typically, you handle that with coaches, and you also have a person on the boat called a coxswain, and they are the commanders of the boat, and they steer it, and they will give you certain calls, or if they observe something, they will make sure that everybody is pulling their weight and also pulling through the water correctly.
Before we wrap this up, Scott, and again, we're talking to Scott from the Humboldt Bay Rowing Crew Club organization, and there's a Learn to Row Day. The specifics on that one more time are?
Just come on down. It's from 7 a.m. until about, we'll run till 12, and there's sign-ups
all
on
four,
our website.
Sitting ready up at the catch.
And
or three
you
quarters.
Can come on down, and we'll teach
attention.
You how to row.
And where is the location?
The location is between the Adorney Center and the Samoa Bridge on Waterfront Drive.
And you talked about the coxswain. These people, I have seen some videos of coxswains, and they seem just unhinged when they start screaming. I think we've got a little bit of audio that we can go to here. Let's see if this comes up.
We're at 36, kind of settling, and one, walking it down. Two, there's the 33, locking it in nice and strong. Four, good, everything you've got. Five, let's stay ahead right here. Six, KMB right here, come on. Good.
Now that's only
nine,
1 minute into a 7 minute
ten,
race,
good,
and by the end of it, she
right
just like her voice is thrashed,
together,
like her
together,
vocal cords are just
right
shreds.
Lazy,
who does that job, and how do you apply for it?
Crazy people do that job. People that are want to be in charge, and you just show up. You show up and you say, "I want to do this." And every coach in the room, their eyes will light up and go, "Awesome!"
Don't you have to be like jockey size? Though you have to be very tiny because you're not actually rowing.
It is helpful for you to be, you know, somewhere in the range of 110 to 120 pounds and short. Yes.
Okay. Well, for more information, tell people where to look.
The best place is hbra.org, and there's even a sign up there for this weekend and for June 1st. And if you need more information beyond that, there's some phone numbers on that page as well.
It has been super nice talking to you, Scott. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Scott. One more time with the coxswains, and then we've got one other thing, pink slime, to talk about. But man, these people are.
Links are going to be at that last 250. Just about three boat lengths to the last 250. Walk me up there. How fast can we get our time to be? How fast is that time going to be?
Jessica, do you have it in your heart to do something like that?
You mean right now?
I mean, ever.
I'd have to be having a really bad day.
Just screaming at a line of athletes. There was a thing at the Lost Coast Outpost about mystery slime found in one of the canals in King's Salmon.
Yes, there was. And a number of people forwarded us that link and said, what's going on here? So we reached out to County Health and Environmental Health, and they went out and looked at it yesterday. We also contacted a couple of university professors, the retired professor who volunteers with us, Bob Rasmussen, and Frank Shaughnessy, who's currently a professor at HSU. And we don't have anything definitive yet, but it is most likely naturally caused.
Naturally caused?
Naturally caused.
Pink slime.
Most likely, not definitively. We are going to collect samples later this afternoon and take them up to the lab at HSU and find out.
That'll be fun.
I know. I'm so excited.
You actually get to do science for once.
I got these mud shoes. Do you know about the Mudders?
No.
So there's these goofy looking shoes called Mudders that are kind of like snowshoes for mud conditions. And they're these plastic, they have a big surface area so that when you walk on the mud, you don't sink in up to your knees.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Somebody, I'm glad that's invented.
Yeah, somebody thought about that. So I pulled them out of our storage and we're going to take those with us over there and maybe even use them.
Oh my God, that must be so thrilling.
I'm excited.
Like, I spent money on these.
Yes.
And now I get to walk around
on mud. I get to walk around in goofy shoes.
Exactly.
But seriously though, so I'll just tell you what some of the theories are. There's actually three colors of things going on out there. There's a green algal mat. There's an orange edge, which Frank Shaughnessy thought could be bacterial activity. And then he said that's actually pretty common in our slow-moving creeks as well. And then there's the pink fuzz. And it could be bacterial. It could possibly be pollution. When bacteria create that red-colored pigment, they're often it's often acting as a sunscreen.
Huh.
So that was what Frank was had to describe about it. Bob said that there's actually an aquarium algae that is that color pink, but we don't know why it would be in the coastal wetlands. So like I said, we're going to take some samples and take it over to the lab and find out what it actually is. It's also changed color since yesterday, so it's now more of a brownish rust color. So,
right.
Yeah.
Like there was a bloom and now it's
life cycle is working out. Yeah.
That sounds fun. I want to do that.
Come on down.
Oh, man. Do you have a lab coat too? An old lab coat?
No.
You should get a lab coat. You deserve one, Jessica.
You think
Hall.
I deserve a lab coat?
You definitely deserve a lab coat. All right. Well, that has been Coastal Currents. And when you get those results, you shove them in the Lost Coast Outpost face.
Yeah, I will.
Perfect.
I'll post a comment that you guys can slam.
You saw that?
I loved it.
Oh, God. You guys go to km.com. We may or may not have made fun of some anonymous commenters on a blog. Jessica Hall, thank you very much.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, that's been Coastal Currents. We will be back.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.